You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
I think it was the tower game,
The tower building game, yeah.
And you had to have like electric, plumbing, something, yeah. Something.
Mechanical.
Yeah.
You can probably just set that in the center.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't want to.
You and I talk pretty loud, so put a glass next to it.
Yeah. Sure, that won't produce any sort of weird resonance effects.
If we tangle it like this, then Kelly and I are equal on this one. You guys are equal on that one.
All right. Yeah.
So we'll hope that this works. I mean, I'll play with the sound.
So who knows the opening?
Right.
Is it your turn?
Yeah, I guess.
Right. Go for it.
Yeah, do it.
All right. Hello, and welcome to Building the Game Podcast, a documentary podcast with Rob Couch and Jason Slingerland. Today we're at Grand Con 2016 in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Crown Plaza.
September 18th.
September 18th. Episode 225?
226.
226. I have failed you all.
I'm You've sorry. Done no okay. worse than Rob has ever done.
True enough.
Should I try to do worse?
Hey, we got an hour show.
No,
so.
No, that's all right. We should do more than just attempts at the opening.
Right.
Sure.
Okay. I still think our best one probably was Gray Dietrich, because he has the voice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, Kelly's got a good voice, too. Don't just count that.
I just meant he's got that higher-pitched radio voice, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Kelly's, like, smooth, slow jams.
Well, I'm what you put on for your lady friends.
True,
2 a.m. jazz with Kelly Hoagland.
There you go. Yeah. So, how's Grand Con going?
It's great.
Yeah.
This is Nate, by the way.
Yeah.
With my Kelly. Raspy bedroom voice for talking really loud.
We were just going to have Kelly on the show, but then we had a contest, and of course, Nate won. So Nate
had to be like at second place, but first place.
First place couldn't be here.
We couldn't find Gray. So.
We're getting to get suspicious, Nate.
Right.
Anonymous shaman.
Well, let's run through it. So I was not here on Friday, but you three were.
I was not either.
No, we're not. Kelly didn't get here until 2 a.m. Saturday morning.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, so Jason and Nate, how did Friday go?
It was fun.
Yeah.
My friend Alan was here. You and my friend Alan was here. You got to play quite a few games. He was fun to play
with. Yeah, he was fun to play with. The difference in the number of people between pre 5 p.m. Friday and the rest of the weekend was pretty amazing.
Pretty quiet then on Friday.
Quarter capacity. Yeah. You could sit and have a lot of empty space.
You just walked in and were like, let's pick a table in the room. And it was
and
like
every
tons.
Game was available at any time, you know.
Yeah. Well, we ended up on that one end, and we turned around. It was like 7 o'clock, and it was crazy. It was just like a sea of people.
Right.
Yeah, good.
It was kind of cool because we walked in. We got here so early, we're staying across the way. Our hotel wasn't ready yet, so we just threw our bags in the back room and came over, and so we actually saw all the vendors setting up, and that was kind of fun. We chatted with some of them while they were setting up, and it's always nice to get that different point of view.
Yeah, for sure.
On how things work. Of course, Jason Gutarski's here, so talk to him.
Yeah, he's around. There are several people around that are notable.
Yep. Yeah. Next to Katarski are the Capels, Josh and Elena, who do kids' table gaming.
Yep.
Food they're fight. Super nice, From Toronto.
Yeah,
so we have Food Fighters, and coming to Kickstarter, I think, in a week or so, is Problem Picnic.
Okay.
Which is a really neat dexterity game by Scott Holmes, where you're...
Okay.
Scott's all over the place.
Guessed it, Scott Holmes. But the game is about rolling... you've got a bunch of picnic cards, which is like food, and you're rolling these different dice, all different varieties of dice that have ants on them. And you're trying to get them onto the food, and then they do different things. So it's just kind of a neat take on a dexterity game with the ants and stuff. So,
right on. Yeah.
Cool.
My wife said, you better back that game when it comes out. Because she thought it looked really cool. So.
Yeah, it's fun. And I played Outlawed, which is the next Green Couch game.
On Kickstarter
also,
now?
Also by Ryan Collar, the Iron Design champion Ryan Collar. and that's what Katarski's demoing, and man, that's good.
Game is so good.
It's short, quick,
so
but
good.
Got a really good, fun bluff to it. I like it.
When he mentioned he had several people who played it and then went and backed it right there on their phones because it's
including
that
Alan.
Good.
Yeah,
Alan did as well. Yeah, you gotta, I mean, once you play it, you want the game. I mean,
yeah.
It's that simple.
I played every Green Couch game. I own almost all of them, and Fidelitas was my favorite, but I think this is going to edge it out. My friends like bluffing, though. So
sure, It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
So good. We actually, yesterday, did a live play of it on Facebook, which I think Jason probably put on the Kickstarter page as well. And then Nate walked into it.
Of course.
So
right. Logged up, of course, I was in the background.
As did Matt Riddle at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, when Matt Riddle walked up and said, "Oh, look, it's that guy that listens to your podcast. That one guy that listens to your podcast.
The one guy."
Well, when it comes to contests, it certainly feels that way.
Yeah. So what else have you guys played? Or what else did you play on Friday?
Oh, gosh.
It's all blank. We played so much.
Did we play Maximum Throwdown on Friday?
Well, he wasn't here, so he wouldn't know.
Oh, you were there, so it couldn't have been Friday. Yeah. That night we played Dragon and Flaggin.
Talk to me about that. How was that?
So I brought, besides Kelly, I have my friends Mike, Dennis, and Chris here. And Chris and Dennis are more D&D Pathfinder guys. They're actually playing right now. But so Chris wanted to play Dragon and Flagon because it's a, you know, barroom brawl. All these heroes are together and they're trying to drink from this golden.
It's very
flagon.
Appealing for that.
Right. It looks really good on
and
the table.
But it's got like that programming. Yeah, it's got, you know, 3D tables and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's got that kind of programming element where you put down two action cards, so you're going to do one, and then on your next turn you're going to do the other and put in a new action card and all that. It looked really fun. It had fun moments, but there were a lot of turns where whatever you were setting up just didn't pan out because you're trying to think ahead. Like, I'm going to throw this mug at someone, and two turns later you get to throw the mug and everyone's moved out of where you could throw it. And I found it frustrating in that sense. But it definitely had some fun moments. And we played it again last night.
Yeah, you played it last night. I didn't play because I was working on updates, incorporating feedback that I got into prototypes.
Yeah.
But that was the only thing I was thinking while you guys were playing was there was a lot more frustrated sounds than happy sounds.
Really? Okay.
While we were playing. So I was like, this is not...
I actually got depressed at the beginning because I didn't want to play it again. I didn't think it was that fun. But Chris, we want to play again. He pulls it out. I'm like, okay. And in the first two turns, you start with reputation. That's what you're trying to get. You start with 20 reputation. The first two turns, I was in the single digits. And I had gone nowhere and done nothing. I was playing the pirate
again. Did you run to the center of board again?
No. I was playing the pirate, the one you played the night before. And I stayed on the edge. And I still got my butt kicked. And I was just like, oh, this sucks. But then I started, I stayed on the edge still, and I started figuring it out, and I actually ended up winning. No, I lost to Chris, but it was very, very close. So more enjoyable when you play it a couple of times and you start to get the order of the cards and things down. But still not my favorite. Somebody told us that Colt Express is like that.
But with a lot less whiffs.
Yeah, with a lot less turns where you don't do anything.
Okay.
So I like to try Colt Express.
Right on.
And that was, that was the worst part of the game was... there were some great moments where, like, I mean, I did this thing where I got to swing across and, like, kick two people on the way through, and I actually won because of that one move, and it was really cool. Mm-hmm. But, like, the rest of the game, I mostly felt like I was just slashing at the wall.
Okay.
So, actually, Chris, he jumped on a table and swung and hit the other two players and landed right next to the flagon. But then I used my pirate abilities to jump up the table and hit all three of them down.
Nice.
So that was really sweet.
And there was, now that there was another cool, like, so you never know who's going to go next, which I think also makes it harder.
Yeah, it's got the timer, time is play order, like Red November and some of those other games where you spend minutes to do actions, so then whoever is the last goes next.
But
and you shuffle them up if they're on the same
spot.
That's
the when you're on the same one, you shuffle it.
Hmm.
So you could have a great move set up and you're like, oh gosh, it's gonna work, and then Nate comes up before me and he steps out of the way. But I did have a couple moments where there was one where Alan was facing me and he was about to slash me, and I went first, and I had programmed a move to walk past him, jump on the table and turn behind him so he was facing the wrong way, slash in front of me.
Facing does matter.
And then I hit him and then I did the swing. So that was, that felt really neat.
Right.
But there was so much,
there weren't enough of those moments.
There's also way too many cards in your hand.
Yeah,
you need about half
18,
the cards you have.
It was a deck of 18. And four of them are specific to your character, and the other 14 or 15 are common amongst everyone.
Right.
Interesting.
And it was too many.
Too much.
And it's because they have duplicates, because you have to program two cards in, but if you get dazed, you have to program another card. It's like you're not sure what you're doing, so they make you. And you could have one card and have to program two more cards, and that kind of stinks.
Right.
But honestly,
and
that wasn't really any worse than the normal way to play, I feel like. Programming three cards,
I didn't usually know what I was doing with my second card, much less my third one.
So it was pretty chaotic and pretty unpredictable, so you had to make predictions and plan your moves with no guarantee of what's going to come.
Right.
So it's a
in a bar fight, I guess that thematically fits, but in a board game, you don't want to have two-thirds of your turns not to work out.
Yeah, fair enough.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm trying to think of what else we played.
We also played, Alan and I played Patchwork on Friday.
Okay.
That was every bit as good as I've been told it was. I absolutely loved it.
You're going to talk right now, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Can't wait to play it again at home because I have it. I just haven't been able to bust it out yet. Now, somebody taught me how to play my own game, so that's great, so I can just do that. There were more games that we played, though. I just don't remember what they all were.
I mean, we all took turns.
What was those? We played Harbor.
Yeah,
Which was
you didn't care for Harbor.
Who else? Who was the third
Alan,
player?
Alan, you, me, and Alan.
Oh, Alan. Yeah.
It's certainly not a bad game. But
and that's also Scott Almas, right?
It is also Scott Almas. Yeah, it just wasn't for me.
Grand God, brought to you by Scott Almas.
It's about a market, right? And you're manipulating a market, and you're shipping goods and stuff from this harbor. In the core mechanics I actually really liked. What I didn't like was the unpredictability of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And not even the unpredictability of it, the ability to screw with it. So, like, I would take four actions or four turns to set up something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Alan would take one move, so one turn, to completely jack with the market, and I've wasted four turns now.
Right.
And that's not
card
fun.
Particularly that
and
got
granted, Alan got last place, I believe, doing that because he kept manipulating it to stop us from getting the big points.
Instead of building his own.
But thing. So not only did he make himself lose, he made it less fun for us by doing that. So it's like, why does that? Like, if you took those cards out, I would play it again. If there were all the market manipulation cards were out, I would try it again. It still felt a little more busy than it needed to be.
Yeah, there was a lot going. Well, just a. I don't know. It took you a long time to get something accomplished,
mm-hmm.
and there were a lot of things you had to accomplish. So the market, like the card that was out there that Alan had, and you can even when somebody purchases that location or that thing, you can still use it. You just have to pay them one to use it since it's now theirs. So Alan wasn't the only one who could have used it, but he was the only one who could use it for free. But that one, you know, you have the four different item types. And in a certain order, and the top one is worth $5, 4, 3, 2, right? This one allows you to just completely rearrange all four tiles. So here you are, you know, I want to buy that $11 building, and the only way I can buy the $11 building is cashing in on the 5, 4, and either 3 or 2, and then he just, like, switches the 5 and 4 down, and you're like, There was a card that allowed you to switch two tiles. I thought, fair enough, you know, that messes with people a little bit. But yeah, that was a broken card, I think.
Yeah,
and there was a ton of iconography, like just too many symbols.
Really good iconography.
Yes,
too much. Kelly's laughing because that is about the 12th time I've said the word iconography this weekend, and that's 12 times more than I've ever said it in my whole life.
It's a good word. We know exactly what you mean when you use that word. The other thing for me was, so with the shipping, there's four different kinds of goods you can ship, right? Mm-hmm. And they're worth ascending or descending prices, right? You could never just ship the bottom good and get something.
No.
You had to ship multiple. And that felt
the cheapest
a little,
building was
you know
seven,
I mean?
I think.
Like, there was nothing because you had money for the turn and then it was gone, mm-hmm. right? Which I'm okay with. I love that when you do damage or have money and if it doesn't completely resolve in the turn, everything resets. I think that's neat.
Sure.
But only having to do at least two to get something wasn't fun. Like, that was...
Yeah. And well, I liked. There's some things I liked about it since we're kind of ripping on it. It had that mechanism where you couldn't do the same thing twice in a row. Mm. You know, like scythe.
That was good.
You haven't
yeah.
played scythe yet, have you?
No.
You know, so you put your little meeple on whatever you're doing that turn, and then you have to move it to a new location. And one of them was your tableau, your starting building, which is where you had to go to buy stuff. So you could. So if you bought something. You couldn't buy something the next turn. Or you wouldn't have had the market stuff anyway. But
mm-hmm.
I did like that. And I thought it was actually a really good use of variable player powers.
Yep.
Because, you know, besides buying a building you had, usually it was get one specific good and one of your choice. and it varied, you know, or something similar, but everybody had a little bit of something extra they could only they could do, but it wasn't, it seemed pretty balanced. It didn't seem like anybody had some really significant personal right. power that yep. nobody else
could. At first we thought so, because remember Alan's was something and we're like, oh, that's, but no, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it wasn't. No.
Okay.
Right. What else?
I played Nevermore.
Nevermore, yeah, I've seen that box art. I yeah. love the box art. So, I don't know anything about that game.
According to Han Bo, he just tweeted me, I may have won Nevermore, but then he said there was a problem with the list, so maybe not. But,
oh.
so we'll Great. Find out. So Nevermore is a game where you're trying to... What are you trying to do in that game? You're trying to get victory points by
Imagine that.
Drafting cards, right? It's a lot of drafting
okay.
And passing. So... And it's kind of like a Edgar Allan Poe type thing that you're doing. So, yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, but it was kind of fun. Like, some of it was weird. Like, they had player elimination, but then you turned into a raven if you died. And then you could do some things, but not everything. And it was a little weird. Hmm. So,
I do like that idea in some games. There's those games out there, I guess, like Betrayal. Haunted Hill, whatever.
Yeah.
too long of a title, whatever it is. You know, that when you're eliminated, you become the ghost, or when you're like, that can be a fun mechanic,
right.
but it has to be worthwhile.
Right.
When you're eliminated, you screw with the people who aren't eliminated. But.
And in this one, you can screw with other people, and you can win, but if you get enough victory points to win, you don't win unless you can first do some complicated thing to turn yourself back into a human, which seemed really difficult.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
yeah. Whereas maybe it would be cooler if it was, you need 5 victory points to win, so if you're a raven, if you get 7 victory points, you win, right? Mm-hmm. Or something like that. Right. And you become a human and you won.
Yeah.
That's something that I might house rule if I did indeed win a copy of it.
Sure.
Right.
Just because
right.
that part was a little weird.
Let's see what yeah. else. I went to the game design for the pros panel. It was, you know, just Q&A with Mike Fitzgerald, Richard Lanius, John Gilmore, and of course Scott Alvis. That was actually, you know, it's always a good thing. I think they realized that most of the people in there were already designers, and so
yeah,
they instead of just having us ask the same questions that would get asked, you know, how do you get inspired, that sort of thing, they actually asked each other some questions first, and then asked us to participate or add on comments from that. So that was really
smart.
Cool. They
yeah,
talked
yeah.
about. In-game conditions and different which mechanics they liked for end of game and stuff, and I actually asked them what they thought about trader mechanics because I just was curious, and I thought Ronnie is, I don't know, I just because his games tend to be co-op, but he didn't seem to think it was all that well. He said you can do it right in a game like Shadows over Camelot or of course Battlestar Galactica, but there's a lot of ways to just do it wrong.
Yeah.
I actually don't like the traitor mechanic in Shadows over Camelot. There's no real benefit to calling them out, because as soon as the traitor's revealed, he's just going to keep pumping out catapults, and the game's
right.
just on a timer, because there's no possible way to...
Well, I think that you only... I've never played with the traitor mechanic.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's something you only pull out when you're experienced, and the game has otherwise gotten too easy for you.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, yeah, that timer is a good thing.
Makes sense.
Okay. Interesting. Right on. So that was Friday?
Yeah. I'm sure we played some other games back then.
I do feel like I played other games on Friday, but I literally don't remember what they
yeah.
were.
Okay. And Kelly and I both arrived on Saturday.
Yes.
You got here earlier than I did. Last week, like stated.
Way earlier.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I think I got here about 10:30, give or take a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Friday, I ran a game of Unreal Estate at
okay.
2. It went very well. People really liked it.
Good.
The reason I thought of this is Ted on Saturday. That's what I was doing when you got here.
Yes.
Running another game of Unreal Estate.
Did we play Minecart? Was that Friday or Saturday?
We did play Minecart Madness on
Friday,
yeah.
Because Isaac played it.
Isaac played it and had some really good thoughts.
Yeah.
And so we put it out.
I was trying to remember why I came back later, because we all played Minecart Madness, and me, you, and Isaac kind of stayed up and
yep. That was why. Yes. Good. Yes. And that was great. Both of you guys had some good feedback on it. Things I think I could do to make it a little better.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Good.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Real.
So when I got here, I ended up sitting in on that game of Unreal Estate. Then you had to run. I don't remember why. Oh, your family was arriving in.
Yep.
And so I hung out with Isaac for a little bit, and we sat down and we were going to play Banefire. but I realized that I left half the prototype at home. So that was a little embarrassing. But while I was starting to set that up, Richard Lonnies came over and sat down with us. And so I started I started to explain it, and then I realized, oh, well, I can't play it because I left half of it at home. So whoops. But then they both kind of said, well, you know, talk me through, give me an idea of how it works. And even without playing the game, both those guys, turns out, are pretty smart guys. And they gave me a lot of good feedback and suggestions. You know, again, they hadn't played it, so it was a little loose, but some good ideas. And not to jump ahead too far, but the four of us then played it earlier today, and you guys had a lot of good suggestions. And when I kind of brought in some of their ideas, I think that really helped us kind of focus on some direction for it, which is exciting. So
I think it's always important to remember all feedback is take it or leave it.
Oh, like, sure.
I don't care who it is, you know.
Of course.
Well, at least the one piece of feedback they gave, we, having played, you told us afterwards, and we all agreed, yes, that makes sense.
Yeah,
right. But there was something else they said, and we were all like, no.
Right. So,
like a theme change, and we were like,
but again, having not played the game, too, they didn't quite get the flow.
Yeah,
because the one change they suggested would have changed the flow of the game dramatically.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, and you know, and this is something Richard Lonnies would even tell you, or Mike Fitzgerald, I've heard him say it.
Sure.
It's your game. I'm going to give you an idea, and if that completely breaks your game, you just tell me to screw up and you don't do it.
Yeah.
Because it's your game.
Right. They totally can.
Yeah.
So, and then I had lunch with Isaac, and, I don't remember what I did after that. Oh, when we came back and I played Seikatsu. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Seikatsu. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. It's a game that Isaac and Matt made that I think is with IDW. I don't know if he said it's coming later this fall or the spring, but anyway, it should be coming sometime in the future from IDW.
And that's an abstract, right?
It's an abstract, yeah. They've got kind of a Japanese theme on top of it right now, but it's abstract, but it's great, really good tile placement on a hex grid. Man, it really right up my alley, just exactly the kind of thing that I like. It felt a lot like Hive. But simpler mechanically than Hive, but also bigger, because Hive can end kind of quickly depending on how you play. And honestly, I sometimes find Hive a little frustrating.
Yeah. Thank you.
But yeah, I really dug that a lot. I'll definitely back that on Kickstarter.
Cool.
For sure. So I highly recommend that. Seikatsu.
I think it's like S-E-I-K.
Something like that.
Yeah. Atsu.
Yeah.
I spent most of Saturday earlier in the day in the playtest room forcing people to play some prototypes that I brought.
Good.
And got some great feedback, made some changes.
Good.
Which ones?
One you two didn't play, and one you did play earlier. Cool. Circuitous, I made a couple changes.
We played with this wonderful woman named Lauren, who's new to Grand Rapids. I just enjoyed playing with her, but she also gave really great feedback. And she's got a game coming out through Dice Hate Me.
Yeah, a quilting game coming out through Dice Hate Me.
Yeah, who knew there would be three published quilting games?
Yeah.
I was ahead of the curve on that one, man. Remember?
I don't even remember.
There was one of my games, I changed the theme on it, but it was Quirky Quilters at first.
I don't remember.
And I was like, nobody's going to buy a quilting game.
Whoops.
I missed the boat, man.
I don't remember what, you know what, that one I didn't end up making. Anyways, that was the... it was a trick-taking game where you had three numbers on each card, so you could turn the card. So it wasn't always just worth one value. It was worth multiple
values. Was it really a trick-taking game?
It actually was a trick-taking game, yes. So actually, 2 years ago at Grand Con, I worked on that game. So.
Okay.
And then when you won a trick, you could take card from a trick and put it in your quilt as you were making the quilt. And then you were trying
Now you know it'll sell.
Now it'll look like I'm stealing from other people or trying to copy.
Jumping on the quilting bandwagon. Quilting is so hot right now.
Well, you know, we're going to reach peak quilting, and people are like, oh gosh, another quilting game. Where are the zombies?
It's a new zombies.
Is this a pirate quilting game? I'm only playing it if it's a pirate quilting game.
I kind of want to make a zombie quilting game now.
Stitching, rotting human flesh.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
We all bought it.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Kelly challenged me to make penultimate frisbee, so I still have to figure out.
That was after we played
Maximum
Throwdown.
Yeah, it's going to be a dexterity card throwing game, which I was... I mean, not that I... I don't know. I liked Maximum Throwdown, and actually the other guys we played with, we all really liked it. I guess I thought it was going to be good, but I didn't think I was actually going to like it that much, but I really enjoyed it.
It was pretty fun.
Good.
Although, as we've learned, Jason Tagmeyer, sorry if you listen to this, but doesn't write rules very clearly.
He's better than that guy from Upper Deck.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. If you ever want to play the game, bring out your dead. Yeah. Just don't even bother with the rules and make up your own game. It will be more clear. Like, the game itself could be really good, but we had no concept of how to play it.
The game we played was still pretty fun. Whether it was the game that the designers made, we have no clue.
There were like, so you're putting your coffins on the cart, and then the cart goes and you put the coffins into graves, and the graves are different points.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two parts of the graveyard that aren't even mentioned or even pictured in the rules. There's a mausoleum where you can put coffins into, and whoever has the most, this is what we figured anyway, whoever has the most coffins at the end in the mausoleum gets the points over everybody else. There's also like a common grave, you know, where everybody gets pitched in. And if you pitch your coffins in there, you get one of those special cards, the treasure cards or fate cards.
Uh-huh.
Those two things were not ever even pictured or mentioned in the rules. We just had to figure out from a couple of texts on a couple of cards. Was it. And it's just, oh, man. There were just things that were not explained at all.
I had an experience with bad rules recently, too. Christine and I bought Grimslingers at Gen Con. Grimslingers, which I guess reviewed pretty well. The art is absolutely amazing. And we demoed it at Gen Con. And so the woman doing the demo, she said, so the basic game is it's a dueling game. It's basically just rock, paper, scissors. But every player, instead of having three cards, has six cards, and it's two different circles of rock, paper, scissors. And if you play a card down that does not compete with somebody else, then you get to keep that for some kind of magic energy points or something. And then the next step is you're kind of working on the same team together versus a monster, and you want to defeat the monster. And then the third step is this kind of co-op narrative where you're following a trail to try and navigate this place. Anyway. And so we had the simple demo, and it was a good demo. And that was a Gen Con, and we hadn't touched it since. But a couple of weeks ago, we pulled the game out and said, all right, let's try and play this. And the rules, it's like a 27-page rule book. Which, like, if I had realized that, I would not have bought it.
Right.
You know? Okay, 27 pages of rules, no thanks. No.
Right.
So, but all right, well, okay, we're going to try this, though. We spent the money on it. Let's try it. We're going to try the basic game, basic rock, paper, scissors game. The rock, paper, scissors basic introductory game was 9 pages in the rule book.
It takes you 9 pages to explain rock, paper, scissors.
And all the exceptions and all the caveats and on and on and on. It was awful. We got maybe 4 pages into it, and we're just like, let's play Carcassonne. Because we know how that works, and I can explain that game in 5 minutes to somebody who doesn't know how to play. I was really disappointed. So I don't know. I guess we're gonna try and find a how to play video on YouTube or something.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I think that rules are a major barrier.
Oh, it's so important. It's so important. Well written rules that are easy to understand, easy to get into.
Especially in a place like this, I can choose from literally hundreds of games to play. So if I pick up something and I pull open the top and there's a thick rule book there, I'm probably just going to put the top back on, put it right back on the shelf. Because
we even had Bring Out Your Dead off the shelf and almost packed it all back up before we started playing because of the rules.
Right. We were really... Yeah. I was trying to read the rules, and I gave it to Mike, and he tried to read the rules, and then we just... Yeah, I was about to give it up.
Yeah, that's rough.
That's rough.
So anyway, back to Saturday though. What else did we play on Saturday?
I didn't play as much. I spent a lot. My kids were here for a while, so we spent a lot of time shopping and looking at stuff. So
we played Boomtown Bandits.
Oh yeah,
that was pretty fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Again, I got a little depressed because everybody picked on me at the beginning.
You did better than I did in the long run.
That's true, but it's really fun because you've got six locations and. You got 3 tokens, 2 fighters and 1 coward, and you're putting them face down on the different locations. You can put multiple in the same one, whatever. And then after everybody's placed, and there's usually 1 location off limits each time.
Yeah.
You go to the first location, you flip over all the tokens, and then so everybody has 3 dice, 2 fighter dice and 1 coward dice.
Mm-hmm.
The 2 fighter dice each have
A coward die.
Sorry, die.
Oh. Singular.
Singular.
the fighter dice have two bullets and four blank sides. The coward dice has one bullet, one coward symbol, and four blank sides.
Okay.
So depending on what tokens you have there and who else has tokens there, you pick up the correct dice, and somebody says 3-2-1 draw, and you just start rolling until you get an icon. And the moment you get an icon, you yell hit, and whoever yells hit first, they get the hit. And you get to remove a token from the play mat. So obviously, if it's just 1-1, you win. If there's there's multiple tokens, you keep playing. But with the coward die, it's a little different, because if you say hit when you see an icon, but it's the coward, you run away. So you could still be the one to call hit, but lose because you run.
Which is great, because if there's two cowards and you both roll it, the bullets, if you say hit, only trigger your bullet. But if you coward and you say hit, it triggers all cowards rolled.
Right.
So there's one point where nobody got any loot because all cowards are rolled and everyone just ran away
from the...
That's funny.
And so if you win the location, you get a loot card from that location, which gives you money, which is victory. And most of them you could also play later to have some special action. Remove a token, change location, blah, blah, blah. So it was really fun. You also got a bonus for being the first one to collect one card from each location. And you got, at the end of the game, you got a bonus for being the person who had the most cards in the brothel, the most cards from the saloon, the most cards that, you know. So it was fun, because the rolling is, I know Jason hates real time. It's just enough real time that you're not, it's not the whole game. Yeah. You know, it's 10 seconds at the most of real time. And it brings that tension.
Actually, in short bursts. I pulled that game out. I was going to check it out and play the wave, and it was like real time when I put it
on. No, it's really just short bursts in real time.
That sounds better.
Yeah, it sounds all right, yeah. It sounds like something I would like to try.
It was pretty fun.
Right on.
We played Pixel Glory back in the room, because Dennis bought that.
Yeah.
Well, Kelly didn't play, but the rest of us did, and I wasn't that impressed with that game. It was too formulaic. Like, there was just always... Because you have all these monsters, and then you have boss monster, and then you have these spells and attack cards. You draw four from your deck, and you really want to play all four every turn, and there's a maximum way to play each card. You know, there's a rock, paper, scissors. You know, fire does extra damage to plants that do extra damage to water that does extra damage to fire. So there was almost always an obvious play. The only kind of cool part of it, which I've seen in other games, is, you know, each monster has a certain amount of life, and you want to kill the monster on your turn so you get the victory points. So you kind of want to be a little strategic, like, do I knock him down? Can I take him out? And if I can't take him out, do I weaken him enough so somebody else can take him out? Or do I try to let him stay strong and maybe he'll come make it back around to me or something? But for the most part, that was very formulaic. There was always an optimal task, optimal way to play the cards.
Okay.
You had regular, correct?
I died. Thank you.
I'll be right back. No problem. I'm going to grab your
prototypes. Tell us about your prototypes, Kelly.
Yes. Tell us about your prototypes.
Yeah.
Well, the two you two played today were Ships of the Line is the working title right now, but
Ships
I'm not
Line,
happy with that.
Yeah.
Where, if you've played Labyrinth, which if you haven't, you should, because it's an awesome game. You can buy it at Target now. It is.
The amazing Labyrinth.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really wanted to do something very tactile with a board like that, so I made a game where you've got two ships that are essentially on tracks, but you can shift what's in front of them and what's behind them. So the whole thing is you're trying to destroy the other ship, but you don't have any ammunition, so you've got to maneuver them into mines, maneuver them or yourself into whirls or rocks to affect your movements, because you want to stay on the board, because if you fall off the edge of the board, you die.
Sure.
It was kind of another working title, is Edge of the World, but I don't like that because that's too close to Here Be Dragons. That's Jason's.
What about Maelstrom? That's a good title.
No, yeah. Here Be Dragons is going now. There's another game coming out called Here Be Dragons.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's tough.
So.
But yeah, Maelstrom's up for grabs.
Okay.
So. Thanks.
The other one was Circuitous, which is a free placement card game where you put a start and finish cards on the table and then you build a path to it. So all players up to 2 to 4 players have cards with paths, and each path has points on it. Some of the paths also have powers like draw two and play one, or rotate one of the other cards 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. So you can set either play a path card or set on your turn. So you build a path there, and whatever cards are along the path, you get points for those, and that's how you win.
Yeah, I really like that a lot.
Thank you. That actually means a lot.
Yeah, important. We played that twice, it was good. Like the first time, Jason and I were just still kind of trying to figure it out.
Kind of really lost. Didn't use the power, and we're like, oh yeah, there's cards that have powers.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that was a new addition.
Yeah.
Based on mine and Lauren's feedback.
Yeah, like
from
I said,
the day before.
Your feedback was great. Like my playbacks that I did on Saturday gave me some great feedback.
Yeah.
And, like by the end of the day, I felt like I was a horrible game designer and should never touch a game again. But it was all amazing. Like it was all amazing feedback. Yeah. So,
Was it Joe Hopkins also gave some feedback?
Yeah,
he's good.
He's good.
Great.
He was really good. It was really good.
But he's honest, which could not always feel good.
No, it doesn't feel good, but it's good. You take your medicine.
Absolutely. So Circuitous, I liked a lot. That second game we played was very different. Took a lot longer. And we were really doing a lot more to screw with each other.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which was a lot more exciting.
But was it still entertaining for the
whole? Oh, the second game was actually more fun.
Much more fun.
Because we knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was
we gave, I think, some decent feedback for ways to help clean some things up. And
yeah, no. Your feedback was good. I think it'll be a lot more solid. Take off the, trim the fat and get rid of it better.
I'm trying to remember what else I played on Saturday.
The third game that Kelly has is called Hench Management.
Hench Management. Oh, right, yeah. Tell us about that.
It Hench started management. With the bidding game
back in January.
You
did drafting the drafting
game. That's where,
you did drafting the drafting game,
yeah.
And
which
I did
unrealistic.
Trick-taking the trick-taking game.
Yeah, so that is, you play as middle management henchmen that are trying to get...
Reuben's there?
Not trying to get a Reuben.
Everyone's trying to get a Reuben. They're amazing.
I disagree.
I'm looking at Reuben and I kind of wish that I had gotten a Reuben.
I'm looking at your bread and I like your bread.
A regular wrap and a firecracker wrap.
I had the Southwest chicken wrap.
Southwest chicken wrap is this one right here?
Okay. Thank you.
So you play some little henchmen and you're trying to get out of the line of fire.
No. This looks like it has ham in it.
That does have ham in it.
That has ham and bacon.
This has ham and bacon in it.
That's a club wrap.
Okay.
Who had a club wrap?
I had a Crown Club sandwich.
Crown Club sandwich. That's a Crown Club wrap.
Yeah, I'll just. I don't want to wait for a sandwich.
Okay. Who had the shrimp wrap?
No shrimp wrap.
Unless
we have one new cook back there, and he put all of our orders together.
So okay, that's fine.
Colonel Mustard Clan, I know that.
I really hope that's a song.
That's why you go with the theme. That's why you go with the themed meals, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Southwestern chicken.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's mine then. Yeah.
So it's a bidding worker placement game.
Do you guys need
game?
Any mustard, ketchup, mayonnaise?
Ketchup would be great.
No problem.
Yeah. Thanks.
Where your workers are also a currency that you bid with, and then use spend to buy items and that sort of thing.
Excellent.
So.
Cool. Much more cool than subpar food I did not order.
Hey, this is going to take 90 minutes to get.
Well, that's why I didn't want to send it back.
Thank you.
No problem.
Get your hair. All right. So, should we pause while we eat?
I don't know. Do you think the listeners would like to hear us chew?
Well,
we can chew with our mouths open to produce more sound.
All right, so we'll take a pause here. And
then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. We have eaten now, most of us anyway.
Yes.
And back to it. So I wanted to say one game that I feel like we lost track of our recap so far, but I wanted to say I took a picture of this on my phone so I didn't forget what it was. I played Onitama, O-N-I-T-A-M-A, which is an Arcane Wonders game. It's just a two-player, kind of chess-like game. You have it's a 5x5 grid, and each player has like four, call them four pawns and a king, for lack of a better description. And you're trying to get your king to the opposite side of the board, into a space where your player's king started, or you want to capture your opponent's king with your pawn. But it's not like chess, where every figure has a specific movement type. Yeah, on your turn you have two cards that describe different ways that your pieces can move. So each player has two of those, and then there's one kind of off to the side. And you take your turn, you move one piece according to the option that's presented on your card, and then after you use that card, you put it to the side and pick up the other card that was on the side, and now you have a different option for your next turn. And then the next turn, your opponent is also going to do the same thing, and then they're going to take the card that you used previously.
Oh!
And so you're thinking about, not only you're thinking about your movement, you're looking at the moves that your opponent has in front of you, and you're thinking about the move that he's going to get next time, and also remember that whatever move I use now, he's going to get two turns from me.
And so is there only five cards in the game, basically?
No, there's a stack. So each time you shuffle it up and you deal out five new cards every time, every game. Really, a little bit of chess, like I said, kind of really scratches that itch, but a lot simpler than that. But the strategy is very different, and I thought it was really exciting. Really liked it a lot.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. Nice approach to that. And it seemed really well made. The box was cool, too. It's not a board, it's a playmat, it's like a mouse pad material, and it rolls up and all fits inside the box. It seems to be really well organized in the box. It's a really nice,
like,
tight package.
Jenga-style box.
Yeah, Jenga-style box.
Yeah, it looks like a tower style.
But it's a magnetic box, and it kind of flips open on the side. So really a tight package. I think I'm going to grab it here before the end of the day. It's just like $30.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, so really impressed with that very much. I think that is the best published game I've played this weekend, I think.
Cool.
For me personally.
Yeah. I think I...
Oh, you also got to play Splendor.
Oh, that's right. I also played Splendor. Okay.
Splendor
was excellent. I think I saw a place that had that for sale for $30 also, but I don't know if I can justify to my wife buying two games.
Or $6.99 on your iPhone.
Or $6.99 on my iPhone. I can't justify spending $7 on my iPhone.
I would personally get the copy eventually, because Christine will love it.
So. She will, yeah.
It's a good game.
But I feel like Splendor I can find anywhere, but Onitama I think I might have a little harder time finding.
I agree with you. Yeah.
So that's why I'm going to go that way, I think.
True.
Yeah.
I saw a number of people playing Saloon Tycoon at different points.
Good. I only saw it in the wild one time.
And somebody played Waterdrome Washout because it was out of the shrink wrap.
Cool.
I donated to the library because they didn't have copies yet. So
yeah, good.
Saloon Tycoon was in the Play to Win. Right?
Play to Win, yeah. I wonder who won that.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. We can check the list when I go pick the game I won. I won Nevermore. So
all right.
Officials.
Cool.
Thanks. I'd have to say Maximum Throwdown was my favorite. It was just surprised me, and it was just fun.
Good.
It was a lot of fun.
Good.
Especially because as we played, we just figured out more and more ways to be jerks to each other.
That's good.
And that's Kelly's favorite thing.
Yeah, to be a jerk.
Pretty much.
You would have loved
only
dragging my flag in there.
Only to
Yeah, good. And you guys played Banefire and gave me a lot of good feedback on that, but I think we already talked about that a little bit.
That was a good start, though.
That was a good start.
Yeah, thank you for that.
I got some good feedback on 5-Day Forecast.
Yeah, did we talk about that?
Me, you, and Han played it.
Yep, on the first day.
Yeah.
And then Katarski played it with me. Well, we played a couple turns. I wanted to just get his feedback. He's really good at games that size.
Yeah.
And he had some great feedback for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked at it as well when we were doing that. So you've played it before, but not this new version.
No, I have not played the newest version.
And between Nate and Han, and then also Katarski, you guys all reinforced the same feedback of how to lay out the board in a different way. So that'll be the biggest change I make in the next iteration. We'll be to tweak that and then see how that is. Because I think that'll make the game real intuitive with how it plays. And so that should be great. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So the three of us played Jewel Heist.
Oh, yeah.
We did.
Mm-hmm. And I was really struggling with the end game and the scoring. I think you guys gave me the right feedback to put me right where I need to be to get that
good
at least feeling closer to finished, if not actually closer to finished.
And I think the last time we played, did we play that Gen Con? Or was
yeah, you played Gen
Con. And made some great tweaks.
Yeah, clearly you've made a lot of progress.
Yeah, I took good notes. Always take notes during play testing. You think you'll remember it.
You won't.
You think you'll remember it, but then you get home and you go, wait, what did they say?
Write it down. Got to write it down. Yep. Yeah, I was lying. Because yesterday I had gotten the comments from Onius and Isaac on Banefire, and I did not write them down because I was not prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And I was lying in bed last night going to sleep and thinking, oh, wait, what did they say? So, yeah.
I've done that and actually gotten up and went and written
it down.
But I try to keep the notepad on me all the time, like a little pocket notepad. Mm-hmm. That way I can always take notes. Mm-hmm. So, officially, we've been told On Real Estate will hit Kickstarter on Tuesday. So if you guys are seeing this on Monday, tomorrow. If you're listening to it any day after that, it's already up there.
Well, this episode's not going up tonight. It's going up next week.
Oh, next week. Definitely
so it's
up
already
and running.
It's already up. It's already funded. Go for the stretch.
I'm really sorry about that. You want dessert?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Soup? I can give you some soup for free.
I'm good. Thanks.
So yeah, it's already up. It's already funded. Go for the stretch goals, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're gonna say.
Yep. Go push for the stretch goals.
I mean, at this point, it's been a week. It better be funded. The funding goal is pretty low, so I feel pretty good about that.
I think you'll do fine.
Yeah.
What's the stretch goal that you actually come to people's houses and build dwarven mines?
Yeah. No, they wouldn't want me. We'd want to hire some.
Okay. How about scorpions in the box?
I actually had Rob sign my scorpion farm tile.
Yeah. See, that's not thematic, man. You got to think of something mean and thematic and say
dragons in the box.
No, we could get scorpions and put a little man face sticker on it, and now they're manticores.
Oh, dude,
that's thematic.
Yeah. Manticores in the box.
Dragons in the box actually makes more sense.
Dragons in the box.
Corinne's got some great dragon art. So.
She does.
Can do some giant fantasy scorpion monsters, though. I mean, manticores not a bad way to go.
You should picture, like, you should have
all this stuff and then scorpion farm.
The zoo expansion.
You should have her just add a little scorpion in, like, on the side of the Hobbit thingy or whatever.
Well, the other thing is it's watercolor, so it's hard for her to add little teeny details like that.
Sure,
you know?
Fair enough. Because
there was a couple times we're like, could you blah, blah, blah? And she's like, no. Again, it's not possible. She's like, not if you want this to be watercolor. And we're like, well, we do, so okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Do you know what size she's doing that art in originally?
And actually, their original's here, so I get to take one home today.
Ooh,
so.
Nice.
I think they are 5x7.
Okay.
Or what's the next size? 8.5x11?
Or it might be 8x10.
It's somewhere in there. Yeah. Somewhere in there.
8x10 for photos.
Typically for art. So, yeah.
I get to take one home. I'm very excited. I think I get the Orc Outpost. So
cool.
This is my favorite.
It's cool. Great.
You like the Elven Treehouse?
My favorite so far.
I don't know. I do like the Elven Treehouse a lot, but I don't know. I keep wavering. I need to look at him again. I like that Thieves Guild. Thieves Guild. I like that too.
Which is one of the power cards now.
So. Yeah. 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 Tough call. Tough call.
So,
yeah. Kelly's choking. He might be dying over there in the corner.
I know how to do the Heimlich, so should I go try and help him?
I think you gotta give him a tracheotomy. Tracheotomy.
That I don't know how to do. If you actually are choking, I do know the Heimlich, so do the hand symbol and I'll hook you up.
Right. He'll just punch you in the gut.
Do I have to be choking?
Yeah, that's me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's like a 17-gallon.
Cool. Well, hey.
You don't get your card back.
Well, I gave
it. Oh, okay. Okay.
Kelly says, you don't go up and talk to someone like that and then give them your credit card.
Yeah, I think maybe we'll fill in builders and the details of that next week after we're not in the middle of
a restaurant.
Yeah, so any final thoughts here as we wrap up?
I mean, I've said it before. Just come to Grand Con or whatever your local con is. Gen Con's amazing in its awesome size, and I'm sure Essen and PAX and all those are so big, but a con like this, I mean, you sit down and have Richard Lonius playtest your game because he's just walking around looking
because he ain't got nothing else to do. He's just hanging out.
I mean, it's just, I like the size.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
I like it too. Yeah,
I wish they had more panels though, like more seminars,
more other stuff to do.
Yeah.
See, and I actually am glad that they don't personally. Like, I like that my whole schedule was I have to do these playthroughs for people for run real estate, they'll take 30 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that because then I can just go play games. And, like, I play so many more published games here than I do at Gen Con. I get so many more prototypes because it's just more time to just play games.
It's true. And everybody's doing the same thing.
Right? Yeah.
And I feel like I can walk through the vendor hall 100 times because it's small.
Yeah.
It's easy to walk through and pick out what you want and then come back. And, you know, so. Speaking of which, I need to go buy stuff. So
okay, wrap this I do show too. Up. So, all right, thanks everybody for listening to the show. Do you have something else?
No.
No? Okay, all right. Thanks everybody for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, send us an email, buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason's @JASlingerland. I'm @poorlyunderscoredesign. Nate and Kelly, how can people find you if they are interested in who you are and your crap?
I'm @NateDarty on Twitter.
Okay.
I have a Facebook page for a game thing that my friend made. It's Platicorn Games.
Okay.
PlatyCorn. Platicorn. So you can look that up on
Platypus
Facebook.
Platypus unicorn.
Like a platypus with a... That's
a really cool
I love that
picture.
Idea. That's...
I love that too.
This picture will look great on the podcast, but...
Yeah.
Don't worry, I still do that after like 200...
All the time, right. That's probably enough. Thanks for listening, everybody. Come to GrandCon next year.
Yes.
All right.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast.